The choices you have to make can be difficult and may alter your life forever. When you're under too much pressure, it's hard to go it alone. Now you don't have to. Whether you struggle with anxiety, depression, time management, family issues, relationships, self-sabotage, guilt, shame, or just need some wisdom and helpful insight, this program is the answer. Healing Conversations with Kamish Nunley. Kamish is a licensed mental health therapist with HealingYourHiddenHurts.com and who also shares her knowledge as an expert author, speaker, and radio personality. You don't have to just survive. You can thrive. Here's Kamish Nunley.
Welcome to another episode of Healing Conversations. I'm your host, Kamish Nunley, with my co-host, Nathaniel McGuire. Nathan, I'm really excited for today because as we wrap up our series on the true impact of bullying, we have the distinct opportunity to interview today the author of the award-winning, best-selling, Building Resilience in Children and Teens, and his newest book actually being released today, in fact, Raising Kids to Thrive. Welcome to the show, Dr. Kenneth Ginsberg. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for wanting me on.
Absolutely. I'm so happy that you could join us today. If you have a question or comment or would like to join our conversation today, dial in to 888-463-6748. If you haven't already, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/healingconversations. Today's show is sponsored by HealingYourHiddenHurts.com and Be Now Fitness Training. Be active, be fit, be now. You know, once again, Nathan, we have had an outpouring response to this series on the true impact of bullying. We've had teens and now parents reach out to us to tell their stories of being bullied and how they need help to overcome these situations. And so I'm really excited because we today have Dr. Ginsberg on our show. And as I was developing our anti-bullying program at Healing Your Hidden Hurts, I researched what would actually be the most effective approach that is both sustainable and impactful across circumstances, whether it's bullying or any other stressor for that matter. And that's when I learned about your work, Dr. Ginsberg, with the 7 C's of resilience. Could you start off today by telling us what it is that you mean when you use the word resilience?
Yeah, again, thank you so much for thinking that I could contribute to such an important conversation. Resilience is about bouncing back. It's about going through tough times and ideally coming through even stronger. But, you know, I represent the American Academy of Pediatrics, and we are not just about having kids recover from difficult circumstances. We're also about thinking about what kind of things we can put into place as we raise our children so that they're going to thrive through good and through challenging times.
Wow. And so you, there's an increasing number of, or increasing understanding that trauma in childhood basically has lifelong consequences. Can you tell us briefly what your philosophy is on that and how you deal with children in that way?
Right. So it's not really about my philosophy. This is about the science and the knowledge that we have now, although I do have a philosophy we'll discuss in a moment. But what we know now is that what happens to you in childhood, if you are abused, if you are neglected, if you grow up in a home with, alcohol or drugs, if one of your parents is incarcerated, we know that this has lifelong effects on your health and on your behavior. In terms of health, we know that, you know, if you are a 50 or 60-year-old person and you were abused as a child, you're more likely to get heart disease, diabetes, certain kinds of cancer, certain kinds of autoimmune disease. You're more likely to get divorced, use drugs, attempt suicide. The effects of childhood trauma last over a lifetime, and it changes your behavior, too. If you are abused as a child, you are more likely to be reactive to circumstances, to kind of go off for things that other people wouldn't necessarily be upset about. You're more likely to feel the need to not tell the truth in order to survive. There are all sorts of behaviors that you have. But then, here's the good news. There's this magical, magical unless that we have to really scream from the rooftops. And that is that there is a protection of being connected with a loving, caring adult, someone who believes in you unconditionally, someone who you trust will protect you. And if you have that adult in your life, even when bad things are happening to you, you can still thrive. So this is alarming news, but it is also inspirational news at the very same time.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that you mentioned or that is quoted on your website that I thought would be good to send out to our social media was, you have on there, unconditional love is key to resilience. It gives children the deep-seated security that allows them to take chances when they need to adapt to new circumstances, and the knowledge that in the long run, all will be okay. What is your position on unconditional love? Because I heard you just mention it just now. How do you feel like that factors into resiliency?
There is nothing more important for the reasons that you just said. When a human being knows that they are loved, then they know that they are acceptable under any circumstance. You know, you're having the show at the end of a series on bullying. Well, you know what the real problem of bullying is? You know where it really destroys people? Is it makes them question their acceptance. It makes them question whether they are actually valid as a human being. But when we have a kid who has at least one person, and more is a whole lot better, but at least one person who absolutely sees them for who they are and who loves them despite occasional bad behaviors in a moment, but really communicates, I'm not going anywhere. That is what makes a human being feel secure. That is what makes a human being feel acceptable and safe.
So, you know, Dr. Ginsberg, what was really important to me in terms of bringing you onto the show today was that we have this strong interest in bullying, right? How do you feel bullying, because you kind of alluded to this just now, how do you feel like that affects resilience? And how can we as adults reach out and help our children suffering in silence?
Right. So I think we talked about it. It's about, when a person is bullied, remember that the fundamental question as you're growing up is that you're trying to answer the question, who am I and am I normal?
Right.
Those are the two most important questions that a human being needs to figure out during their developmental years. And when a person is bullied, then what the messages that they receive are, I'm not acceptable. Who am I? I'm a person who other people look down on. Who am I? I'm a person people can insult. Who am I? I'm a person who is deserving of isolation and condemnation. And that is profoundly destructive. Now, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. There's a bit of an echo.
Okay. So what we want to do, there are two very important roles we need to do as adults, to take as adults in terms of bullying. The first thing that we need to do is that unconditional love within our homes. Because while we cannot protect our child from absolutely everything in the world, we can create a home base that reaffirms the sanctity of their presence here and that we know that they are incredibly, incredibly important human beings in our lives and worthy of love. And that is like immunization for the rest of the world. But the other thing that we can do, and you know, the model that we know works best in terms of bullying is the Olveus model, where we go into schools, we go into settings where bullying occurs, and it's not that we work so hard on changing the victim or even the bully, it's that we create an environment where it is completely unacceptable to have it not be safe for anyone. You know,
right.
I'm medical director of Covenant House, Pennsylvania. We have all sorts of kids within our walls, kids who have been through profound traumas, and they are some of the finest human beings you're ever going to meet with the deepest levels of compassion. But one of the things that we make clear from the moment you walk in the door is this place has to be safe for everyone. Everyone is going through something, and everyone has to feel safe. And that is what the adults do to create a zone of safety.
Wow. Wow. I mean, you sum that up so beautifully, and everything you say is just true, which is why I think, you know, when I was developing our anti-bullying program, I looked and researched heavily your development of the seven C's of resilience. Could you briefly describe what these C's are and what went into you developing them?
Absolutely. The first thing you need to know is that I borrowed them from many of the youth development experts in the world, okay? So I have to
credit, we all do, yeah?
I have to credit Rick Little, I have to credit Richard Lerner, Karen Pittman, but what I've done is I've added some extra C's so that it's not just about developing youth, but it is also about healing youth who have been through tough times. So briefly, the first thing a human being needs is confidence. Confidence to be able to take chances and to be their best selves. Confidence does not come from showering meaningless praise on people. It comes from competence. It comes from having the skill sets that people recognize and develop and never undermine. The next C is connection. We know that the most important thing in a human being's life is connection. In fact, we know that during the worst of times, the people who survive are more likely to be women. Why? Because they connect. They reach out to folks. So connection. The next is character. We want to be able to teach kids good values. We should have no shame in telling kids what right and wrong is, in developing them tenacity and grit. The next one is contribution. We want for kids to be able to know how much they matter. What we want, you know, you talked about kids who are marginalized or have been through difficult times. Well, those are the very same kids who walk down the street and who are judged wrongly for one reason or another, their shape or the color of their skin. They are judged wrongly, and that is dangerous to them. When we have them out contributing to society, when we have them helping their neighborhoods, helping their teachers, helping the environment, then they become surrounded by thank yous rather than condemnation, and that makes kids rise. Okay? The next C is coping, right? Everything that you fear, everything we don't want our kids to do, whether you're talking about bullying or whether you're talking about sex or drugs or cutting, everything we fear is about people trying to feel better, you know? And,
right.
And telling kids what not to do, that doesn't help.
Right. No, it doesn't.
We have to show them what to do in positive coping strategies. And the last C is control. You know, you either think that you have control over your universe or you think things just happen to you. And especially if you're talking about folks who are traumatized or folks who have been through difficult times, those are folks who have lost control. Right?
Yes.
And what we have to do is we have to put into place the means to make kids understand that they do have control over their choices. And I'm happy to go into more detail for anything that you want to talk about.
Oh, absolutely. No, I think you summed that up great, beautifully. But I was really interested in your comments on parents that think that they can control their children and control their behaviors. For instance, I'm working with a client currently who's in high school, and he talks quite frequently about how his father uses humiliation tactics in order to either help him with the bullying circumstances or feels like that is training him up to be a man. What are your thoughts on parents who choose to use different humiliation tactics in order to parent their children, especially if they're in a bullying environment?
Right. So the good thing about that father is that he cares enough to be engaged. You know,
absolutely.
So I congratulate him for that. And what I want to do now is work with him to help him to understand why that isn't the best way of being engaged. Toughening up a child who is already being battered by other people is not the way to go. The way to go is to give that kid the love and the support that makes them understand that they are worthy, that they are valued, despite what those fools might say. And if you need to become tougher to not hear those words, to be able to refute those words, that's one thing. But to use humiliation for your child is just going to, when that child is asking that fundamental question, who am I? Now you've got the answer that says, I am someone worthy of humiliation both at school and at home. And that's the last thing we want to do.
Absolutely. You know what, Dr. Ginsberg, you're saying some great stuff here. I want to get an opportunity to bring our co-host back in. So why don't we take our first break, pause for station identification, and when we return, we'll hear more from Dr. Ginsberg on the seven C's of building resiliency.
The effects of trauma can last a lifetime. Pain, confusion, anxiety, depression, grief. Healing Your Hidden Hurts is a safe, serene environment dedicated to guiding you along your journey toward healing. The compassionate clinicians at Healing Your Hidden Hurts can provide the support, advocacy, and expertise to help you move forward again, regain stability. From fear to faith, despair to hope. Visit HealingYourHiddenHurts.com. Speak to a clinician today. Don't go at it alone. HealingYourHiddenHurts.com.
Be Now Fitness is Indy's newest fitness spot, located on the corner of 96 and College. Exercise your right to no long-term contracts, unlimited fitness classes, and nutritional coaching. Be Now Fitness. Be fit. Be active. Be now.
Now, back to Healing Conversations with Kamish Nunley on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back to Healing Conversations. I'm your host, Kamish Nunley, and today we are joined by our guest, Dr. Kenneth Ginsberg, author of Building Resiliency in Teens and Children. If you'd like to learn more about his book and his newly released book, please reach out to www.fosteringresilience.com. Before the break, Dr. Ginsberg, you shared with us some phenomenal information about your development of the seven C's and, you know, where they came from, as well as your new ventures into your different books. I'm really interested in learning more about how we can help parents in these situations. And before we took our break, we're talking about using humiliation tactics, which can be fairly common in some cultures, where we believe that in order for my child to overcome, they somehow need to see or be treated almost the same to kind of toughen them up. And so I'm hoping to bring Nathan back into the conversation because we had a little bit of microphone issues. Nathan, what do you think about parents who use humiliation tactics with their children?
Well, we both know just the effects of shame that has overall for a child. And then as they are growing and begin to come into the community and education, who they are, just the negative effects it has on their ability to be secure. But one of the things is, you know, Dr. Greensburg is talking, I'm thinking about is, Dr. Greensburg, what do you see in regards to the social fabric, meaning like curriculum and the education system, because of the data behind what you're saying, of them really embracing this and seeing it as more of a national problem, and how that if we really take light to some of the things that you're saying and the data behind it, how we can have just all around just a better essence of how people are interacting with one another. What do you see in regards to, you know, just the education system? Because many times it's looked at as like you're trying to push some type of morality, right? Some religious base here. But because of the data saying the effects, are you seeing any movement in those regards?
Well, let's remember that I'm not an educator, but let me make this point. This is not about a religious or a moral agenda. Well, yes, it is about a moral agenda. What it is about creating places where kids can thrive. And what we try to do is, you know, my role in the universe is to train professionals how to work with kids in a loving, strength-based way. I also have a professional curriculum. That's part of my role. But my role in the conversation here is to prepare parents to be the best parents at home. But let's face the fact, and the fact is that other than home, kids are spending the most time and the most waking hours in school. So creating a setting in school where kids can learn is about what education is about. So being trauma-informed, knowing what's happening in school, creating settings where kids are not bullied, where all kids can thrive, creating settings where we address some of the isms that hold so many kids down, that is not religion. That is morality, and that is about making it so that our kids can learn. You know, I always, when I give my presentations, I always say, you might think I'm adding one more thing to your plate when I'm talking about how to treat kids well. You might think I'm talking about one more program, you know, whether it's a bullying program or a trauma program or a strength-based curriculum. No, no, no. I'm not adding something to your plate. This is the plate. This is the plate. We're creating an environment where kids can flourish.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know how you follow that up, right? You're absolutely right. And, you know, Nathan, I hear a lot of times when we do go in, we talk about these isms, the fear of different, that you speak on that quite a bit. And so I just cannot fathom, in some situations what makes, our parents or what makes, schools not allow for some of these issues to be explored more directly. And I know it's a whole fear-driven thing, but in terms of what's going to make your kid thrive in life, what does it mean to sit down with them and learn how to show them unconditionally, like, I'm here for you, or even for schools to be able to reflect and or mirror that? I just think sometimes we think that it's going to take too much time or there's going to need too much effort in that. And so, you know, we have the result that we have. Dr. Ginsburg, I don't know if you're aware, but Indiana is one of the leading states for suicide among our adolescents. And so the need here is great. And part of the cause of that is bullying. And so I wanted to ask you, is there hope? Like, what can adults do in our homes, and what can communities do to help reiterate in the face of these extremely challenging circumstances?
So we all have to make kids understand that we care for and about them in our homes and on the streets and in our schools. We have to turn around our perception of who kids are. Personally, I dream of a world in which a young black man in a hoodie walks down the street and someone who looks like me, instead of crossing the street, says, good evening, how are you?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That when we as a nation value our kids uniformly across the board and let them all know that they have meaning in our lives, our kids will rise across the board. So this is a large societal change. You know, my professional curriculum, which is called Reaching Teens, is about strength-based communication. It's about seeing every kid as they deserve to be seen based on who they really are, not as how they choose to behave. Right. And that's a very, very different thing, because kids put on all sorts of fronts to not tell you how they feel, which is scared and alienated, and how struggling and how much anxiety they have trying to answer the question, who am I? When we know how to see kids as they are, they rise. I work with the most traumatized. I work with homeless street and gang kids. And what the model I use is love. And that's not a weird, dangerous word. It is about regarding a human being as they deserve to be seen. That's what it's about. And, you know, some of the finest professionals I know, hands down, are teachers. And teachers want to do the right thing. Teachers, you know, they're not doing it for the money. Let's remember that. Teachers are there because they want to change kids' lives. And they know that school is a place where kids learn or don't. And we have to speak their language. And the language is that I'm not adding something to your plate. I'm giving you tools so that you can create kids who are able to learn. And teachers are important to every kid, but for those kids who don't have what they need at home, teachers are the most critical people in our society.
Absolutely. Nathan, did you have a follow-up question for that?
Well, I'm just, you know, commenting as Dr. Greensburg is talking because it is deep. You know, we're in Indiana, Dr. Greensburg, which is the Bible Belt. And so you clearly articulated that really this is a moral thing, more so than a religious thing. And the schism, you know, right here, I believe in Indiana, is that when you talk about morals, people think it's religious, and they don't have the ability to make a distinction between the two. And then you have a lot of these, to me, is the secular school environment where if someone talks moral, there's kind of like this reaction to it about, well, what is love? What does that look like? What is unconditional love? And is that your job to teach me these morals that now I'm thinking, because I've been traumatized many times by religion, I'm thinking you're pressing and pushing a religious jargon on me. So I think it's powerful what you're doing, because you have a clear distinction that this is a moral thing. It's an obligation for our community to be healthy, and then giving them practical steps, you know, to actually, you know, take part in this love or unconditional love. Do you see that this country is getting a better understanding of what abuse is? Do you see that at all?
Gosh, I don't know. What I do know definitively is that the scientists, you know, are getting a much clearer understanding of what trauma does to the brain and the behavior over a lifetime. Okay, that's what I know. And so far as, you know, the religious issue, again, is, you know, we're talking about ethics, morality, we're talking about raising children. Just because I use the word love doesn't make it religious. It's part of being human, and it so happens to be that religions also like love. But love is not even the word that I use with kids, because it can have mixed meanings. It can sound creepy coming from an adult. To me, it's about how you embody love when you're a professional. To me, love is seeing someone as they deserve to be seen and reflecting it back to them and breaking their state of demoralization that allows them to be their better selves. That is what everything that I write in terms of my curricula, it's about applying the meaning of the interconnection of humanity and making it useful. And in our homes, there's no conflict with the word love. That's what our homes are supposed to be for, right? It's supposed to be about loving our child, but we also have to balance that love with the high expectations we have to hold every child. That's what actually the book that came out today, Raising Kids to Thrive, it's about balancing love with high expectations. It's about balancing how to protect your child while also letting them learn from life lessons.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about the critical importance of doing strategies. Could you briefly explain why that's so important as we raise our kids with coping strategies?
Yeah, so everything that you fear, everything that you don't want your kid to do, whether it's, you know, being in a gang, which is about finding, you know, professional connections, right? Professional friends, practically.
Yes.
Whether it's about doing drugs, which is about becoming numb. Whether it's about cutting, which is trying to feel. Whether it's about smoking, which is about becoming calm. All of these things are not kids who are in your face choosing to be bad. Or for that matter, adults. It's about human beings trying to figure out some way of dealing with their pain. But when we raise them at a very young age, you know, building resilience in children and teens, it starts when your kid's 2 years old.
Right? Yes,
If I could change every family to make it so that they understood what discipline really means, number one, and number two, how to be really connected, and probably number three would be how to raise your kid with a wide range of coping strategies. Because I can't take away the pain of life. I can't do that. I don't have that power. But if your kid has a whole repertoire to draw from when life gets tough, they'll read a book, do poetry, they'll pray, they'll talk, they'll exercise, they'll know how to relax, they'll know how to break big problems into small pieces, they'll know what's a real stressor and what just feels like one. We can do that starting when our kids are two, and that is drug prevention.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I want to ask this question, but I will say that it's a little difficult to kind of ask this question and kind of get your opinion on it, but what do you feel about spanking with our children?
So the American Academy of Pediatrics does not favor spanking, okay? We favor the kind of discipline that really is about making kids understand that the freedoms that they get, that the privileges that they get are earned through demonstrated responsibility. There are all sorts of, I mean, that's what we talk about in my books. Remember what the word discipline means, okay? Discipline means to teach or to guide lovingly, okay? It does not mean to harm. It does not mean to control. And you've got to be very cautious when you're disciplining that your kid is learning the lesson and not feeling punished. When they feel punished, they feel like a victim. You do not want your kid to feel like a victim. You want them to gain a sense of control over their behaviors. And when you're the consequence matches their behavior, they say, oh gosh, I shouldn't have done that. I'm going to do better next time. When you ground a kid for a month for being out for 15 minutes, they feel oppressed. And the challenge with spanking for a little kid who doesn't understand is that it feels like punishment. And they feel like they've been bad, and they wonder why the person who is supposed to protect them is hurting them. And that's why I'm going to take a stand against it. What I'm not going to do is call it abuse. You know,
I'm
not calling it abuse. If it's coming from a loving place and it's controlled, and if you are clearly disciplining a child in a way that they understand, you know, what they did wrong and it is mild, I'm not going to call it abuse. I am going to say that I believe that there are better ways. I'm going to appreciate the fact that the parent is trying very hard to teach the child a lesson. That's their job. I'm going to congratulate them for that. And I'm going to invite them to consider that there are better ways.
Absolutely. Before we take our next break, you say on your website, nothing parents say is as important as what children see them do. So we all know the impact modeling has on our children. How do we as parents remain consistent with the things that we say in our behaviors? Do we go by the guidelines of the seven C's, or how do you help parents to understand how to remain congruent in those areas?
Assuming you're alive, you're going to feel like a hypocrite sometimes. Assuming you're alive and breathing, you're going to make some mistakes in front of your kid. Okay? That's called humanity. What matters, though, is that we don't say one thing and do the other consistently, because that is going to make the kid feel like we are a hypocrite. You know, and I'll say something else, and this is really a gift for parents, in my opinion. The greatest gift you can give your child is really to take care of yourself. You know, remember, we're raising kids to be healthy 30, 35, 40, 50-year-olds, right? And when we do that, they're looking at us. We're the model. We're the model. And when you take care of yourself, kids see what a happy, healthy adult should be. When you come home and you've had a bad day, and if you reach right for the beer, don't be surprised when your 16-year-old is reaching for the blunt. Don't be surprised, right? But when you come home and you admit you've had a bad day, that's okay. It's okay to talk out loud, but then you say, I'm going for a run, I'm going to take a shower, I'm going to go write my feelings out, I'm going to call my aunt. All of that is modeling for kids that there are healthy ways of dealing with pain.
Absolutely. Well, let's pause for station identification, but when we return, we'll learn more from our listeners who wrote in for help on how to solve their problems of being bullied. Stay tuned.
Be Now Fitness is Indy's newest fitness spot, located on the corner of 96 and College. Exercise your right to no long-term contracts, unlimited fitness classes, and nutritional coaching. Be Now Fitness. Be fit. Be active. Be now.
The effects of trauma can last a lifetime. Pain, confusion, anxiety, depression, grief. Healing Your Hidden Hurts is a safe, serene environment dedicated to guiding you along your journey toward healing. The compassionate clinicians at Healing Your Hidden Hurts can provide the support, advocacy, and expertise to help you move forward again, regain stability. From fear to faith, despair to hope. Visit HealingYourHiddenHurts.com. Speak to a clinician today. Don't go at it alone. HealingYourHiddenHurts.com.
You're listening to Healing Conversations with Kamish Nunley on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back to Healing Conversations. My name is Kamish Nunley, and today we are talking about the finale for the true impact of peer abuse in our lives. And today we are joined by expert Dr. Ginsberg, author of Building Resiliency in Children and Teens, and his new book, Raising Children to Thrive. Did I get that? Is it Raising Children to Thrive or Raising Teens to Thrive?
It's Raising Kids to Thrive.
Raising Kids to Thrive. Right. And if you'd like more information on purchasing those books, please visit his website at www.fosteringresilience.com. In these episodes, Dr. Ginsberg, we've had the fortunate opportunity to hear from our audience members on their specific situations where they will write in and ask for our feedback on how to overcome these things. And we've had a couple teens and a few parents reach out to us, but I'm only going to narrow it down to two responses today. You, myself, and Nathan will have an opportunity to comment and share what we think they can do. So the first one, let's call her Mary, wrote in and said, "School hasn't even started yet, and I get made fun of every day. I'm on my school's varsity cheerleading squad, and if you ask anyone on the team, I'm an outgoing, happy person, although sometimes I come home and just cry because the girls on the team call me stupid, slow, idiot, retard, heavy. I weigh 117 pounds and I'm 5'3 and they call me heavy. It hurts really badly. I don't want to tell anyone because I don't want them to see me upset. So I used to just laugh it off. Then it continued, and now it's getting to the point where I'm questioning myself. Am I stupid? All I have to do is simply walk into practice and they make fun of the way I greet other teammates. I also don't think the girls realize they do it as much as they do. Now it's just the second nature for them to call me dumb every time I ask my coach to repeat instructions for me because I wasn't in the room. I'm a straight A student, and when the girls on my team constantly put me down, it hurts a lot and makes me think if I'm even worthy of getting the grades I do. I used to sing and dance at practice, but now I don't even have to say a word and I get made fun of, so I stopped. I don't think they realize how much it hurts to be the target of every single one of their jokes." Wow.
Wow is right.
So,
you want to
start? Yeah.
You want to start?
Absolutely. Please, okay. Go right ahead.
So there are a couple lines that really struck me on that. First of all, as a doctor of adolescent medicine, let me tell you that your body is healthy, and I worry about the other kids on the team who are saying your body is not healthy. I wonder what their bodies might look like. That's number one. Number two, the line that really struck me at the end, and it isn't a surprise, is "I wonder if I'm worthy." That could have been, she could have finished that line with anything. She said "of my grades," but she could have said "of this" or "of that." That is the effect of bullying, is whether or not I am worthy. So let me just say to that wonderful young woman who was brave enough to write in that there's only one line that she said that I didn't like or that I would like to challenge her on. She said, I don't want to tell anybody what I'm feeling. And that is a mistake. While she may not want to go to the bullies and get involved in a fight with them, you know, that ideally the coach or is going to be able, should be able to handle that. I would love that coach to walk in and hear some of this stuff and have a real talk with the team about what is acceptable and what is not acceptable and about how this is a team and that a team that does not stick together is not a team. I'd love the coach to create an environment that's acceptable or not. Yeah. But I need this young woman to understand that telling someone, the bravery it took for her to write to you, Kamish, is incredibly impressive. I want her to find that same level of bravery to find an adult who she can really have a therapeutic relationship with, like a counselor, like an aunt, like her coach, and talk about those feelings, because she cannot leave these feelings inside. And it would be a great act of bravery if she did reach out. Not weakness, bravery, because she understands she doesn't deserve to feel like this or be treated like this.
Absolutely. And, you know, Dr. Ginsberg, what stands out to me most is that it seems like before all of this started to occur, she was a really confident, happy, outgoing person. And just to show the transition of that down to where she is now is absolutely it's unspeakable in my opinion, because we have these beautiful, bright, shining lives in our kids, and then people take it away. And now she feels like she's questioning everything about her existence. And, I mean, that's a sadness that is unmentionable. And so, Dr. Ginsberg, what would you do in terms of the seven C's that you've instituted? How would they apply to Mary's story?
Oh, on so many levels. You described that Mary's losing her confidence. And yet, you know, what I heard in Mary's story was she's still doing well in school. She still has the wherewithal to show up every day. My goodness, this young woman must be strong. She must have tremendous competencies, right? She has reached out to you. What tremendous coping skills she's already showing. What I want her to do is to really move up that other C of connection. I want her to have other circles of friends and other people in her lives, ideally her parents, maybe her coach, but other circles of friends who see her for who she really is, because I love that she's a cheerleader and I don't want her to quit the team, but I want her surrounded by other people who see her as who she is to kind of give her that sense of strength and meaning that will make her just hear those things and go, wow. Something must be wrong with these kids if they don't see who I really am.
Right. Absolutely.
Yes, Commissioner.
Well, go right ahead.
I want to comment about, I think you guys really highlighted the tell anybody part, to say to the person to make sure you understand that because this group of people has this perspective about you, to know that there is a bigger group that has a better perspective about you. And what happens is you will actually think that the whole world thinks like this little group about you. And that you will internalize all of these negative things and really believe something is wrong with you. So I love what Dr. Ginsberg said about you are somebody, and somebody really wants to hear your story. They really want to hear what has happened to you, just as we all are hearing what has happened to you. And it really just speaks to courage to reframe what is happening. Sometimes you learn in life that you get an opportunity to be bullied, and it gives you strength to understand if you go through it with the right attitude, you will have compassion on others who are bullied and be able to reach out and step up. So just remember that everybody does not look at you the way in which this small group is looking at you.
Yes, there's a whole nother world out there that will embrace you, will care about you, love on you. You're absolutely right. Thanks so much for pointing that out, Nathan. I think we have enough time to do another person here. She says, her name is Jocelyn. She says, I am now 37 years old. I still live in the area I grew up in. I still get a funny stare or funny scared feeling when I run into certain people I went to school with. In junior high, I was going to a small private school. I was very small, very skinny, and short. I was picked on relentlessly. I had glasses and braces in the wrong clothes. I had my hair pulled, clothes ripped off, and was pushed around in the hallways. The kids doing this to me were the privileged kids, and the teachers would look the other way. It took almost 20 years for my parents to acknowledge the hell that I was put through. I'm not sure they ever knew how bad it really was for me. Now I am the parent of two teenagers and stress to them that bullying is not an option and that they need to be kind to everyone. I believe that my experience has made me a stronger person and a better parent. My heart aches for all the kids going through this now. You know, that really brings me to like the residual effects of bullying, you know, as you go through life, all the things that actually stick with you. That you encountered as a child. You know, she says that whenever she runs into these people, she still gets scared. And Nathan, you and I both know that, you know, that's that emotional stuntedness, right? We revert back to the age that we were traumatized emotionally. What do you think about, Jocelyn?
I agree with you that we all get stuck in our adolescence, whether it's trauma or difficulties or even whatever our self-image during adolescence kind of lasts through us for a lifetime. But let's go back to what Nathan said about this other kid, because this kid is now a woman. Here is a mm-hmm. woman who said, I have gained compassion. I have raised my children with an understanding of how to be compassionate to other people. One of the things that strikes me almost every week when I go to Covenant House is how compassionate human beings are who have been through difficult times. I don't wish difficult times on anybody by any means. I wish it could be easy for everybody. But I am always struck by how difficult times make us compassionate, empathetic, and want to heal others. And I'm just so thankful for Jocelyn that she grew up into a kind of a woman who wants to be a healer, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wow. Nathan, what are your thoughts on that?
I think to kind of highlight what you guys are saying, I love when you listen to people's stories, you hear the strengths, you hear the power, you hear the gifts in them. You hear the uniqueness and the resilience. And what I heard that spoke to me was what she has become as a result of what has happened. And, you know, I would just say that when we share our stories and people can experience what has happened to you and how important you are and how you've overcome this, it inspires other people to know, first of all, if I was the bully, look at what I've caused in someone else's life. And then if I'm being bullied, look at how this negative thing can, you know, really impact me. And, you know, and on the flip side of it, but look how it can impact me and allow me to be an inspiration later on. So, I would just say that I'm really impressed, with both of these individuals as they write about how they're, these instances have affected them and caused them to be stronger people.
Absolutely. And our last one here is a parent who kind of describes watching her daughter go through this. This weekend, I recently witnessed an incident. Two of her old friends phoned her. They asked her if she'd started her menstruation. She said it was none of their business, but they kept on bullying her. She wasn't strong enough to end the conversation. They were laughing and shouting, We want to know. We want to know. I was standing next to her and felt disgusted. I felt really sorry for her. Afterwards, I thought of calling one of the girl's parents, but I decided not to because I thought it might make things worse for her. I was very upset because I used to spend a lot of times with these girls, but now they think my daughter isn't good enough for them. I was worried about her because I thought it must be horrible to believe you've got really good friends and then suddenly they turn against you.
So this gets us back to the point of why it's so important, especially during mid-adolescence and especially for girls, to have multiple circles of friends. Because mm-hmm. the truth is that friends turn on and off during adolescence, and you never want to be isolated. It's the isolated kids that are really in danger, and they really have their self-esteem affected. So you want to have multiple circles of friends. At the same time, you know, I wasn't there at this particular incident, and I don't know if there is chronic bullying going on between this child and her friends. Mm-hmm. This particular subject of wanting to know about menstruation is a very, very common subject among girls, and in itself may not be a sign of disrespect or bullying. And it's important that we not kind of catastrophize every normal interaction where kids kind of are weird or checking in on things that are uncomfortable, because that's part of normal adolescence. So again, I am not judging here because I don't know the context. It might be that if
Absolutely.
The context is of constantly being teased, then this was bullying, but it also may not have been.
I like that too, because when I heard it, you know, Kamish, we know sometimes parents may even project when they were bullied.
Absolutely.
That is happening when it is not happening. And so I didn't really hear she got a chance to really talk with her daughter about how did she feel about what was happening versus how the mother was feeling about what was happening. It could have been two totally different things.
Yes.
And Dr. Ginsberg, I love what you said about the different circles, because that gives parents, you know, these tools to make sure that if your kid, if you can get them into several different extracurricular activities, they have better chances socially. But then if friends are off and on again, that they have these other circles to connect with. But I would really say to the mom, you know, make sure you check in with your daughter the right way. You know, we also know at certain age, especially middle school, that's when kids kind of change and they don't want to tell you everything. And they kind of look at you like, you know, give me my own space. Why are you asking me these silly questions, Mom? But do what you can to kind of connect with the child and see what is their perspective. How did they feel? Do they feel bullied? Or was this just an incident where you thought that this was happening and maybe that it wasn't?
Absolutely. I think you guys both hit it on the head. In order to wrap up today, Dr. Ginsberg, I understand that you have a book being released today, Raising Kids to Thrive, Balancing Love with Expectations and Protection with Trust. This book was co-written with your daughters, which is phenomenal, and informed by 500 other young people, and introduces this concept of lighthouse parenting. Can you summarize for us what lighthouse parenting is, and then what's next for you, and how can we follow you in terms of what you're going to be venturing on?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I've really very much enjoyed this conversation. You know, there are all sorts of conversations out there about how we should raise our kids. And frankly, part of it is madness. It's just insanity. If you come up with a radical enough idea, the media buys into it. So we have the extremes of tiger mom parenting to the other extreme of free range parenting. And we actually know what works. What works is balanced parenting, parenting that recognizes it's both loving and monitors at the same time. You're not your child's best friend, but you certainly are someone who's always available to them. So we in the American Academy of Pediatrics have coined a phrase, lighthouse parenting, so that it really can catch on. What's the idea? What you want to be is like a beacon on the hill that your child can always look to, a stable force to measure yourself against. But at the same time, it's your job to make sure that your kid doesn't crash against the rocks, but they have to learn to ride the waves themselves.
Mm.
It's
Absolutely.
About balance. A lighthouse parenting will be someone who balances parenting. They're loving, but they monitor. They keep their kids safe, but they let them experience life. That is what we want to do. And in terms of what I'm doing, you know, I am a lucky enough man that I've put together a couple of books for parents so that parents can know, based on both the science and opinions of lots of kids, including a bunch from Indiana and Illinois, that will teach you what it is that kids need to raise kids who are going to thrive. And at the same time,
Absolutely.
We now have this professional curriculum called Reaching Teens, Strength-Based Communication Strategies to Build Resilience and Support Healthy Adolescent Development. And it is a toolkit that professionals can use to apply the knowledge that we were talking about today about trauma, about resilience, and about positive youth development. So my materials are on fosteringresilience.com, and what mm-hmm. I'm doing is always going to be on there. But forget about me. Look at your child. Look at your child and just say, all I've got to do is see who they are and hold them to high, high expectations at the same time,
Absolutely.
Which doesn't mean about grades, and it does mean about living to their highest moral selves.
Wow. Wow.
Awesome.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Dr. Ginsberg, for coming on today and just filling us up with all of this awesome information on what it takes to build resiliency in our children. I hope you will consider coming on the show again.
I would love to.
Absolutely. Nathan, as always, I appreciate your wealth of knowledge and information that you share with us today. But join us again in 2 weeks as we begin our series on domestic violence. Thanks again for listening to Healing Conversations with Commish Nunley, where we believe what makes you vulnerable can also make you beautiful. Till next time, take care.